Some people still push toxic pesticides and synthetic fertilizers, things they learned 30 years ago. Well, Howard Garrett will talk about things he learned 30 years ago, but also what things he learned last year and yesterday. So here he is, your host, the natural organic scientist, the Dirt Doctor.
Welcome back to the Healthy Living Radio Show, everybody. If you want to call and be with me, it's 866-444-3478. We've been talking a lot about grass and trees, and it looks like we're going to do more of that from the calls that are coming in. Those of you in the north, a lot of you are still under snow and can't be doing a whole lot about this, but thinking about it. The cool season grasses are a little bit easier, if not a whole lot easier, to grow under trees in certain cases. Primarily what I was talking about earlier are the summer grasses that need all that sun. But even with the northern grasses, with fescues and ryes and bluegrasses and things like that, they're going to do better in full sun than in a whole lot of really heavy shade. So you'd have the same approach of going to ground covers and other kinds of plants, hard surface materials, as the people in the south, but you can get away with a little bit more shade on those kind of grasses for sure than you can in the south with the heat-loving grasses. Some of the grasses we use in both places. We use a lot of fescue, for example, on golf courses in real shady areas where we can't grow the Bermuda grasses. And speaking of golf courses, here's Joe in Lawton, Oklahoma. Hey, Joe.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm pretty good. I'm going to play a little golf maybe this afternoon. We're going to be in the mid-70s. We've had the craziest weather here.
That's the same way here.
Up and down and up and down.
Yep. Well, the question I had, I finally took over a golf course here in Lawton, and I want to try to push it as much organic as possible. And as you know, when you talk to most of those guys around there, all they want to do is chemical, nitrogen, nitrogen.
Yep.
And so I've heard you over the years talk about playing golf at a couple of courses down in the Dallas area that have used a lot of organic, and I want to get involved with that.
Well, that's good thinking, Joe, because you can have a nice niche there, and also the end result is you can save a whole lot of water and have a real reasonable budget and have success with an organic golf approach. I got some good news for you. We're in discussions with a company, and I can talk to you more about this later on, but it applies to everybody listening, whether you're talking about a golf course or a park system in a city or landscaping on a commercial project or a home garden. One of my friends in the landscape contracting business has put me in touch with a fellow that he buys a lot of liquid fertilizers from. And this person really was interesting to talk to because they had been going the direction of organic thinking for quite a while, using still synthetic fertilizers, but they'd come up with some techniques and some products to make synthetic fertilizers more bioavailable. That's one of the problems with the synthetic stuff in general. It's not very bioavailable, and so much of it volatilizes into the air and washes off and leaches down into the water system and ends up being a huge environmental problem. Plus, it's expensive because you're wasting so much material. So these guys have been really thinking well and coming up with techniques of buffering and chelating and doing various things with these synthetic fertilizers so they're more bioavailable. And they have reduced the volume, the pounds of this fertilizer that they're putting out per acre on a golf course and in other projects too, tremendously, just, really huge amounts of volume. Well, and that's a great move in itself, and in that process and of thinking about that, there's more and more talk around the country, as you know, about being more sustainable and being more green and being more environmental and even talking natural organic in some cases. And so the same fertilizer people started looking into truly organic fertilizers and have come up with some that are organic that I am most intrigued about. And they're even open-minded to listen to some of the ideas we have and formulas to come up with even better things. So the good news for you going the direction you're going is you may have more available to you than we had just a few months ago.
Well, that's great news. Yeah, I just picked up a big old sprayer, you know, the 14-foot boom on it. So I was hoping to stay as much liquid as possible.
Well, what is your program now? What are you doing? Have you just taken this place over?
Yes, they've taken it over on the 7th of January. So we're just basically cleaning up from the last group that was there.
Okay. Do you know what they were doing, what their program was?
Well, yeah, they just old style, you know, chemicals for this, round up around the edges.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, go down high nitrogen fertilizer. Now, they did use a lot of milorganite on the greens and tea boxes.
Okay. Well, that's at least a step in the right direction. What I would recommend that you do, Joe, in this case, and if you get more details, more information, by all means, you can send it to me, and I'll be glad to talk to you more later. But just to get it going, and this is the same kind of thought process I would recommend for anybody out there. When you know that the property you're dealing with, whether it's a vegetable garden or a city park or a golf course, and you know that it has been being brutalized with synthetic fertilizers and toxic chemical pesticides, it's a detox thought process first.
I see.
And so what I, if it were me, if I were in the job you got there, I would put out as application number one, and work it into your budget, which I don't know what it is, but work as much dry molasses into the budget on one application right away as you can. And I would put it, you're going to have to be a little bit careful on the greens because it is, you know, a fairly good size granule. I'd experiment with it a little bit.
Yeah, I've used it around my house for years. And
you're familiar
it.
With it? Okay. I would put it on the greens and teas for sure, and I put it in the fairways as much as you possibly can. I wouldn't worry about, you know, the roughs and things like that if the budget's limited at this point.
Yeah, this is a kind of a municipal course, and you know, it's not your country club style, but it really needs – it's a good play, and then a lot of people learn to play golf there.
Well, that's great. It's even more important to go this route because of the water savings and the money savings that comes from this. The second thing I'd do with that big sprayer of yours is that I would either make a Garrett juice mixture, and the formula, you know, is on my website,
yes.
Or buy the commercial version if you want to go that route. It's available in totes and yes. You know, 55-gallon barrels if you want to go that route. The young superintendent that was maintaining the Rawls course at Texas Tech when I met him a couple of years ago, he was making his own version, and he was doing it with fertigation. Now, I don't know if you're set up for that yet, but that's something you ought to at least keep in mind, that long-term, putting a little bit of the Garrett juice mixture out as fertigation is very cost-effective. And like I said, he was doing his own. The only thing he wasn't putting in his, and I talked him into doing it because he had been reading about it, was the apple cider vinegar. He was doing seaweed and fish and a liquid humate and, you know, the other basic ingredients of Garrett juice, and having great, great success, beautiful, beautiful turf. They got taken over by the Rawls, not the Rawls, that's the name of the course, the Troon Management Company took over the management of that golf course there at Texas Tech, and they brought in their own people and their own superintendents, and I've had no contact with them since that happened. But while he was maintaining it, he had documented that he was saving something like 300,000 gallons of water a day.
Well, we need to save water because we're limited on our water supply.
Well, that's the first steps. I think some kind of sugar to stimulate biological activity. And this company, and I'll tell you more about them when we talk again, but they've got an organic fertilizer now that's basically sugars from sources other than dry molasses. And I'm pretty excited about the whole idea.
How does crushed limestone work? You always talk about granite, but we have limestone crushers around here that you can pick up the fines and the screens. And I know if you ever put it out in a parking lot, that Bermuda covers a parking lot instantly.
Well, it depends on the chemistry of your soil. The other thing I should say that I'd recommend that you do first thing up front here, Joe, is get some soil tests. And I'd take a different one anywhere. It's a different condition. You know, where you have really good-looking grass growing, test that area. Where you got some real problem areas, test that separately, and send it to Texas Plant and Soil Lab. Don't send it to anybody else.
Texas Plant and Soil Lab
down in Edinburgh, and they will give you some more fine-tuned details to tell you whether the limestone would be a good idea for you. It may be a great thing for you to use.
That's basically an old red clay is what we have.
Yeah. Limestone may be just wonderful there. Let me put you on hold. We'll chat a minute off the air. I'm Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor, 866-444-3478.
Tired of poor-performing crops, gardens, or lawns? Texas Plant and Soil Lab offers you the most accurate and thorough soil nutrition test in the industry. Our special method is accurate for every soil type and in all areas of the country. The quality of the water you use for irrigation is also critical to the health of your soil and plants. We can provide you with a complete analysis and corrective recommendations for your water. Go to asktheplant.com today to see useful information and a full description of our services. That's asktheplant.com or call 956-383-0739. The Natural Organic Warehouse provides state-of-the-art natural organic products and programs. If you are a grower, farmer, rancher, landscape contractor, or homeowner who expects excellent results, convenience, and to save money, then you need to visit naturalorganicwarehouse.com. That's naturalorganicwarehouse.com. Once again, naturalorganicwarehouse.com. The Natural Organic Warehouse. Organic programs and products that work.
Keeping our bones strong and healthy becomes more of a challenge as we age, especially for women. This is Dr. Natalie Engelbart, scientific advisor for Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. Research has proven that adding a probiotic supplement to your diet will fortify and strengthen bones, making them less likely to break. A clinical study done exclusively on Dr. O'Hara's probiotics found that women and men who took Dr. O'Hara's probiotics for at least 8 weeks had significantly increased bone density. The calcium we consume through milk and supplements is not always absorbed or used to build bone. In fact, without a healthy probiotic population in the gut, calcium can pass right through undigested. The nice thing about probiotics is that they are part of the original plan. They are supposed to be in the intestinal tract. As a doctor, I worry about depending on drugs that harden bone by slowing the normal remodeling process. But I can't think of a good reason not to have better digestion at any age.
Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Covering the bare soil around plants is crucial, and there are several mulch choices. The best mulch for any site is shredded recycled plant material such as limbs, leaves, twigs, dead plants, bark, spent flowers, and other plant debris that grew on the property. That's the natural way. How it is done in the forest and on the prairie. Second best would be purchased shredded native tree trimmings. Third in line is shredded hardwood bark. Pine bark and cypress are not good choices. Pine bark is just bad in general. It won't stay in place and contains chemicals that hurt plant growth. Cypress doesn't break down well. Mulch should decompose to create the true natural food to feed microbes and plant roots. Pine needles are good, but look out of place if there are no pine trees on the property. Lava gravel makes good mulch and has the extra benefit of keeping squirrels and cats out, but lava gravel has its negative points. It looks harsher than organic mulches, and it doesn't break down into humus. The best commercial mulch is a mixture of compost and shredded tree trimmings. For more information on mulch, go to dirtdoctor.com.
There's a small dog food company up near the Red River in Munster, Texas, and it's the one I recommend. My dogs eat only Munster natural dog food. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you by now. Main thing to my dogs is the taste, but Judy and I notice how it makes them look and feel. The absence of toxic preservatives and the presence of the highest quality ingredients, including prebiotics and L-carnitine, and the presence of some very unusual ingredients that I've been recommending for a long time are all important. Some of the Munster products have no soy, wheat, or corn. Some of the formulas are the original ones, so there's something for everyone. Munster natural pet foods are made with grains from local farmers, and the bags are made right here in the USA, not in China. Everything about Munster Natural is quality and results in healthy cats and dogs. If your pet food store doesn't stock Munster, ask them to contact Munster Milling through their website at munstermilling.com about how to get the products in your area for your dogs and cats.
Here are some myths and truths about healthy eating. Myth: Vitamin B12 can be obtained from certain plant sources such as blue-green algae and soy products. Truth, vitamin B12 is not absorbed from plant sources. Modern soy products increase the body's need for B12. Myth, animal fats cause cancer and heart disease. Truth, animal fats contain many nutrients that protect against cancer and heart disease. Elevated rates of cancer and heart disease are associated with consumption of large amounts of processed vegetable oils. Myth, children benefit from a low-fat diet. Truth, children on low-fat diets suffer from growth problems, failure to thrive, and learning disabilities. Visit howardgarrett.com for more information on living a healthier lifestyle and for finding great natural organic products.
It is not uncommon for the air inside a home or office to be more toxic than the air outside. This is because of the presence of toxic materials that outgas and the fact that homes and buildings are better sealed and insulated than ever before. Keeping windows open as often as possible allows fresh air in and keeps toxins flowing out. This is especially important when cleaning your home. Skip the store-bought air fresheners and instead try boiling cinnamon, cloves, or any other pleasant herbs. Also, plants may not make your house smell different, but are good for filtering contaminated interior air. Natural organic cleaning products are now on the market and are competing for that spot under your sink. They are non-toxic and they do not put off toxic gases. Visit howardgarrett.com for more information on how to live a healthier lifestyle and to find great products for your home that work well and don't contaminate the air.
All righty, Howard back with you. Now, open line, if you want to jump on here, 866-444-3478. Let's see. I didn't finish talking about the fruit trees. I got excited about talking to Joe, a golf course superintendent interested in going organic. There's more and more of that. I was talking to Bob Webster about the fact that there's a couple in San Antonio, a couple of courses that are doing a whole lot of organic down there. And I've got to get down there to see those people meet and talk, because it's starting to, you know, the conversation at least is finally revving up for people to want to consider doing some things that are in the natural organic realm, because they're starting to hear about the fact that it actually does work and that it can save money and all that sort of thing. So it was good. We talked to Joe a little bit more off the air, and we'll keep you posted about what he's up to as we go here. Fruit tree pruning is what I didn't finish, and then I'll get back to the phone lines. Fruit tree pruning is kind of an art more than a science. It's a little bit of an art, a little bit of a science, I guess, mixed together, like a lot of things that we deal with. To begin with, you'll hear the so-called experts a lot of times tell you that when you plant a fruit tree or a pecan tree, that you want to cut back a whole bunch of the top. You want to whack off 50% of it to make up for lost roots. It's a really silly recommendation. It doesn't make any sense at all. And it's not something that we're guessing about. We've done it both ways. Dr. Whitcomb up in Stillwater, Oklahoma, who has done more actual research and collected more actual data on this than anybody, other than maybe Shigo originally, for those of you that are arborists and so forth. But there is hardcore research about cutting a tree back when you plant it being unnecessary. In fact, if anything, detrimental to the plant, because it's going to want to grow that part that you've cut away back before it starts putting out any new root growth or doing anything else. It's putting its energy in the wrong place. So when you plant a little pecan tree, plant a little peach tree, pear tree, whatever, don't cut it back indiscriminately anyway. If you need to prune it to create a branching pattern, that scaffolding pattern going out, you know, like an upside-down tripod, to help you with pruning and everything long-term, that's fine. That's a completely different matter. It has nothing to do with cutting the top back to compensate for lost roots. And especially on a bare-rooted tree, which is a lot of what a lot of the fruit trees that are planted, you know, they don't have any lost roots. And if they're in a container, they don't have any lost roots. So the whole concept is just misinformation. You shouldn't cut the tree back when you plant it unless you're trying to shape it to grow a certain direction. That's the only reason, and that's fine. It'd be better if you didn't have to do that. The next thing is you prune trees as they're growing in a couple of different ways. Some trees require almost no pruning at all. Pear trees, they don't really care that much one way or the other. Apple trees can be pruned heavily to be put on an arbor so you can pick them easy, keep them down at a low height. Again, that's for your benefit, not for the tree's benefit. The tree would like to grow great big and tall and have a nice open shape and would have fruit on it fine. But to prune it so that it's going to be better and easier for you to harvest and manage the plant, that's something that you do for that reason, and that's fine. Plum trees need very little pruning so that you leave as many limbs going out at a 45-degree angle as possible is good, and that goes for all fruit trees. Reason is fruit forms better on trees growing at a 45-degree angle than growing straight up or growing straight out. Simple as that. You can thin out fruit. That's a form of pruning as necessary early in the growing season to have less numbers of fruit but larger fruit, and that's something we talk about later on. We don't get involved in spending a lot of time or money on sealing the pruning cuts and all that stuff. The pruning of grapes is very heavy. We prune off 80% or so and just leave either one or two tees off of the trunk with as many buds as you want to have left. And to read about that, you can leave them anywhere from 6 inches, as wide as your hand apart, to 8 inches to 12 inches. It depends on how many shoots you want coming off and how you want to maintain it from that point forward. But the basic pruning of grapes is you're either going to grow wood or you're going to grow grapes. So you cut off a huge amount of volume. The best time to do all this fruit tree pruning is late winter. That's ideal. Now, commercial people, they can't do that. They have to prune all during the winter to be able to get them all done. But the ideal thing for homeowners to prune your fruit trees and your vines and all is late in the season before bud swelling and bud break is possible, and that way you won't stimulate any early growth that might lead to some freeze damage. Pecans need very, very little pruning. Dead wood, dangerous things, that sort of thing, they don't need to be shaped. Thinning out trees just to thin them out every year, I don't recommend for fruit trees or for landscape trees, either one. Prune with, common sense. And we've gotten more details about that in my tree book and in the other books that we've written that cover trees at all. We always go into the pruning a little bit, but it's just common sense. Don't do things that are silly. Don't overdo it. Don't lift. Don't gut. Howard Garrett, 866-444-3478. More on all this stuff right after this.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. A fire in a crowded nightclub in Brazil has killed at least 245 people today. Police and firefighters say 200 more were hurt. The cause of the blaze still not known. Thousands of mourners have filled the streets in the Egyptian city of Port Said for a mass funeral for 35 of the 37 people killed in rioting yesterday. The crowd has been chanting slogans denouncing Muslim President Mohamed Morsi. French and Malian troops are pressing toward Timbuktu, another stronghold of Muslim extremists in northern Mali. The advances come as French and African forces also make their way to Geo from neighboring Niger. And British diplomats say there is a specific threat to Westerners in the Somaliland region of Somalia, and they're urging any British citizens in the area to leave immediately. This is SRN News.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me. and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now 1-800-801-9691. 1-800-801-9691. That's 1-800-801-9691. 1-800-801-9691.
With Esperance Sports, I'm Patrick Foss. San Jose is one of four teams off to an unbeaten start of the abbreviated 48-game NHL schedule. The Sharks blanked Colorado 4-0 Saturday. Sharks left wing Patrick Marleau with two goals and an assist says he's glad his record-tying four straight multi-goal games to start the season have helped his club get off to a 4-0 start.
It's good that we're winning and things are going well right now. It's obviously only four games, but we'll just keep trying to build on it.
He's become the second player in NHL history to open a season with four straight multi-goal games. Chicago was 5-0 after they beat Columbus 3-2. Jonathan Toews scored the game winner early in the third for the Blackhawks. Matt Reed notched his first career hat trick in Philadelphia's 7-1 win over Florida. Defenseman Mark Stahl scored the tying goal early in the third as the New York Rangers beat Toronto 5-2. Wade Redden notched his first NHL goal in almost 3 years to lead St. Louis to a 4-3 win over Dallas. It was Los Angeles 4, Phoenix 2, Calgary 4-3 over Edmonton. Anaheim won a shootout over Nashville 3-2. This is Esser in Sports. San Antonio has the most wins in the NBA with 36 after a 108-99 win over Phoenix. Spurs guard Tony Parker with 31 points says it took a while for his club to get into full gear.
In the fourth quarter, we made the stops that we needed, and we played a lot better. We moved the ball, had some big baskets.
Portland handed the LA Clippers their four straight loss, 101-100. Other NBA winners, Washington, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Houston, Milwaukee, Denver, and Utah. Top 25 place on number one Duke beat Maryland 84-64, while Villanova upset number three Syracuse 75-71 in overtime. At the Farmers Insurance Open in San Diego, fog all but canceled Saturday's round. They'll now finish the scheduled 72-hole event on Monday. Tiger Woods has a two-shot lead. The Pro Bowl will be played today in Honolulu, but Baltimore Ravens defensive back Ed Reed will be spending his time watching film on how to stop San Francisco's offense.
And as a secondary, to get our hands on the receivers and make sure, we're trying to throw off the timing and whatnot, but it's all about execution at the end of the day.
The Super Bowl next Sunday. With us for In Sports, I'm Patrick Foss.
All righty, Howard, back with you. Oh, not an open line right now, but when you hear somebody leave, you can jump on here at 866-444-3478. Brad is next up in Arlington, Texas. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Howard, how you doing, man?
Doing well. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah, anytime. Hey, I was wondering, what would you recommend to use as a wedding agent for like a weed spray? Like, I already have the Avenger herbicide.
Okay.
And I just want to, kind of add something to it to make it a little more sticky, so to speak.
Generally speaking, you don't need it when you're using an orange oil or delaminating product. I was when I was spraying the weeds, I don't know if you heard me talking about spraying the weeds at the beginning of the show, but I added some orange oil to some of the test sprays that I did, and it stayed real oily. I had trouble getting it off my hands. It has a real oily, slick kind of a effect. In fact, it was the Avenger product I was playing around with. I forgot to mention that when I was talking about it earlier. So in general, that's not that necessary. The one that I use the most, the product I use the most as a surfactant is the BioWash product, because that stuff does something special. It's very hard to explain it, but it does some kind of a cleaning action or something. We know without question that used by itself, it controls disease pathogens as well or better than anything I've ever seen. When you use it in with your Garrett Juice sprays or fish and seaweed or whatever mixture you're using on a regular basis, not real heavily, but, like a teaspoon to a gallon or maybe as much as a tablespoon a gallon, I think it's beneficial and will help with insect and disease control as well. We haven't seen much, if any, evidence that it hurts beneficials, which is a little hard to explain, a little hard to understand even, why it would help you with a beneficial or not hurt a beneficial, and it would help you control the pest. But when I do put something in as a surfactant, I'll use BioWash or I'll use a yucca extract. It's a great product, too.
Okay. Then I'll try that out.
All righty. Give it a shot.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it, buddy.
Appreciate the call. Thanks.
All right.
Let's go to Carrollton and talk to Ray. Hey, Ray.
Hi, Howard. I'm potting up some tomato seedlings.
Okay.
And when I make the little hole, I sprinkle a little mycorrhizae granule and some granule dried molasses. And then I water them with a diluted mixture of Garrett Juice Plus. And I noticed on the label that the Garrett Juice Plus contains molasses. So my question is it possible to damage the seedlings by using too much molasses?
Yeah, it is. And the way I've done it, the way it works in a negative way, Ray, is if you use so much, it stimulates so much biological activity, it'll give an effect of like burning the roots of the plants and hurting the mycorrhizal fungus and the root hairs and everything. What I would do next time, have you seen any damage yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. What I'd recommend next time is to put the dry molasses or any kind of a dry product that you're using that's sugar into the bed preparation. Don't put it full strength down at the touching the roots.
Okay.
Mix it in, homogenize it into the mixture. Mycorrhizal fungus, no problem, but putting it right in the directly in contact with the plant. What you say you're using a dry product, that's fine. The liquid ones maybe next time are a little easier to use, something like the BioSI, and just dip the roots or soak the seed before you plant with the mycorrhizal and bacteria product. And I also recommend that when you use mycorrhizal fungus, use one of those products that contains bacteria and fungus both.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Good luck with your garden.
Thank you.
Let's go to an open line at 866-444-3478. Here's John in Aledo, Texas.
Hey, good morning, Howard. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi to you, sir.
Hey, we're going to start our seedlings this year instead of buying pre-made plants or pre-grown plants. And I have a couple of questions. Rather than doing potting soil, would it be possible just to get dirt out of our garden and put the dirt in the little, I guess there are 3x3 little white plastic pots, and just start them in there rather than the little peat pots and work your way up? And it just makes sense to me to use your local dirt, and I just wonder what you thought about that.
Well, I think that your thought process is good, but I would amend it a little bit.
Okay.
What I'd recommend is you use some potting soil and make your own or use a commercial one and add a little compost to it. What I have been experimenting around with right now that I know works on other plants, and I'm looking at it on seedlings. I taught a class where Logan works for a nonprofit and showed a lot of kids and grown-ups how to plant seed. And in some of the seed, we planted them in straight compost. And it was my own compost that we've been making over a period of time that has everything from dry leaves to kitchen scraps and dog manure and everything else in it. And it's going to be interesting to see if that works better than what I was going to recommend to you, and that is to take your potting soil, and instead of using straight native soil in those containers, use the native soil as an inoculant in the potting soil. Then you still have the real loose friability aspect, but you've inoculated it with the native life, all kinds of bacteria, right, fungus, and everything else. It's in the native soil, and you've got the best of both worlds.
And so you would mix it in 80-20?
I think 80-20 would be absolutely perfect.
Okay. Now, I have a compost
80,
pile.
80 being the potting soil, 20 being the native soil.
Right. Now, I have a compost down there that has the exact same stuff that you have. that we keep going, should I throw some of that in there?
I think it'd be great because you'll have different life in it than in the native soil a little bit.
Okay.
And so what you're doing is you're creating the best of all worlds.
All right.
You, when you do that and you've really done it for a long time, you may not even need to buy any additional microbe products. But at this point in time, I've never seen that to be the case. I've seen, you know, I've been working on my soils for a long time. They're pretty healthy. And I still see a benefit of putting mycorrhizal fungus and bacteria in. I guess it just kind of supercharges things, and it's probably worth doing.
All right. The other question I had is, how do you prevent the plants from, like tomatoes, from getting very leggy, you know, long, tall, but slender?
Light.
Lots of light.
The light is the issue there, John. The mechanism in the plant is if there's not enough light, is set in motion for that plant to reach out and try to get more light, you know, somewhere. So to keep compact, real good compact growth, I think foliar feeding, you know, like we talk about all
right.
the time.
Plus.
Yeah, along with plenty of light. And if you're starting stuff inside, it's just the, you know, white light, the brighter the better. The real expensive grow lights are fine, but just daylight white.
Okay, because what I did was I went to a restaurant supply house and bought a wire rack, you know, they use for supplies.
Okay.
And I set those. And
that's
I've
a good idea.
And I've got a two-bulb fluorescent light over each rack, and then we're going to set it in the window. And I figure between the fluorescent lights and the natural light coming in, we should be able to, you know, give them plenty of light.
Well, hopefully, if they start to get leggy, either next time or maybe even add it to this on certain flats to see if it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The incandescent lights, they're called daylight. I think they're called daylight white.
Okay.
It's just a real white light. Gives you just about all of the spectrum that you would get from the expensive grow lights.
Okay.
All right.
And we'll try that. And then one last question. Last year we had no garden because we had a problem with high nitrates in our garden, and things would grow but not fruit, or the tomato plants would just die, slowly just kind of die. And you said put zeolite and humates in it. We've done that, tilled it up, and so we're ready to go this year to see what happens. Is there anything else? I mean, we got a soil sample from Texas Soil and Plant Lab. Basically, you know, we infoed y'all on it. Didn't really say to add a whole lot. So I'm just wondering,
that's good.
Is there anything we need to do other than we did the zeolite and the humate and the poundage you recommended? So I'm just wondering, is there anything else we need to do? I mean, I didn't add any molasses or anything, just zeolite and humates.
Well, I think that the most important thing you've done, if you had high nitrates, was the zeolite. You've done that. Some kind of sugar is needed, but there's sugar in garret juice. So
we use that every week.
Yeah, you don't really need to do anything else with all that you've done. And if Texas Plant and Soil Lab indicated that you're pretty well balanced, I think you're going to see really good production this season.
Well, I hope so, because eating them store-bought tomatoes last year just about killed us.
I think it'll do well. Keep me posted on it, and if it doesn't work perfectly, we'll figure out what's the other little missing link, but it sounds like you got it all covered.
Outstanding, Harold. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Bye. Let's go to Ella in Duncanville. Hello, Ella.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Last Sunday, I planted two Yates apple trees. Those are antique apple trees that I ordered from a place in Virginia.
Okay.
And so they came dry rooted, of course.
Bare rooted, you mean?
Bare rooted, yes. Yeah. And the directions, of course, I listened to what you were saying earlier. The directions are that I'm supposed to cut them back like 50% or something. I did not do that. I was reluctant to do that, and I thought, I'm going to wait a little while and maybe do a little research. However, one of the trees has two sort of center branches or trunks, if you will, and the other one has three. And I'm wondering about cutting those back so so that I have a nice, strong center trunk going up? And if I should, when?
Well, that is a reason to prune, Ella. You're smart. If you have co-dominant branching, which means you have more than one central trunk that's trying to be dominant,
mm-hmm.
you don't want that. You'll have a joint between those stems that are growing up that'll be V-shaped instead mm-hmm. of U-shaped, and that's weak. So you want to choose one of them, the strongest one, cut the others off, and then later you can form the prune so that the branches start going out at that 45-degree angle. You can do that now if there's any that are growing that way, but keeping the one strong branch is very, very important, like you're thinking. Let me put you on hold, and we'll talk off there. I'll be back. I'm Howard Garrett. Don't go away.
BioSI is a leading manufacturer of beneficial microbe and enzyme products. BioSI products help build healthy soil to grow healthy gardens and food crops. BioSI products loosen the soil, reduce fertilization needs, and help reduce irrigation needs. BioSI can be used to treat flowers, lawns, shrubs, and trees, as well as herb and vegetable gardens. Water Doctor by BioSI cleans and maintains ponds, lakes, and water gardens. Contact them today at 866-393-4786 or on the web at BioSITechnology.com.
One of the places you can go to buy Crazy Water is at the Crazy Water store in Mineral Wells. This is where the Crazy Well is and where you can purchase Crazy Water and many related products. Crazy Water is what I drink, and there are several reasons why you should too. Other waters can't add naturally occurring minerals to their water, only synthetic ones. Crazy Water's high level of natural minerals are more readily absorbed by your body than synthetic minerals. Crazy Water is also a natural sports drink without all the artificial flavors and sugars. Crazy Water drinkers love it because it's real and it's an easy means of hydration and electrolyte replenishment. Crazy Water's been making people feel good since 1881. Go to drinkcrazywater.com and click on Find Us to locate a store in your area. If your favorite store is not carrying Crazy Water, click on the red Get Crazy banner ad on the top of the store location page to print a page that you can give to your store so they can get Crazy Water for you. That's drinkcrazywater.com.
The Texas Organic Research Center is a nonprofit research institute focused on the effectiveness of natural organic approaches in gardening, landscape management, and agribusiness. TORC wants to show that organics work better than chemical approaches, saves money, and helps us to enjoy healthier lives. The Texas Organic Research Center can use your support. Your contribution is tax deductible. Go to dirtdoctor.com and click on the Texas Organic Research Center logo on the bottom of the homepage to find out more about TORC and how you can help. Trees become infested with insect pests and diseases when they are in stress and sick. That's when Mother Nature sends in the cleanup crews. Insects and disease pathogens are simply just doing their jobs, trying to take out unfit plants. More plant sickness is environmental. Too much water, maybe not enough water, too much fertilizer, or maybe the wrong kind of fertilizer. Other culprits include toxic chemical pesticides, compaction of soil, and grade changes. There could also be ill-adapted plant varieties, overplanting single plant species and creating monocultures, as was done with American elms in the Northeast. The Dirt Doctor's Tree Health Plan is simple. Keep trees in stress-free condition so their immune systems can resist insect pests and diseases. The sick tree treatment is basically stop using high nitrogen fertilizers and toxic pesticides. Remove excess soil from the root flares, aerate the root zone heavily, apply organic amendments, and spray trees and soil with Garrett juice. To learn more on maintaining healthy trees, go to dirtdoctor.com.
Without good health, little else matters. Good health affects weight, skin quality, teeth, hearing, eyesight, and enjoyment of life. It also affects your energy, controls your allergy sensitivities, and helps prevent the degenerative diseases like diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, MS, and cancer. Here are a few ideas on living a more healthy life. Drink water from glass or stainless steel rather than from plastic bottles. Plastic, especially the soft plastic bottles, outgasses contaminants that accumulate in the body and negatively affect your health. Eat food that is grown or raised naturally and prepared with little or no processing or toxic chemicals. Exercise regularly. Walk or do more vigorous exercise on a regular basis. Work out with a partner. Or join a yoga, fitness, or martial arts class. Visit howardgarrett.com today for more information and products to help you live a healthier lifestyle.
One of the most important organic product manufacturers in Texas is the Medina Corporation down in Hondo, Texas. The company's been helping farmers, ranchers, landscapers, and homeowners with quality soil building products longer than anyone in the business. Medina has quality fertilizers and soil amendments, both in liquid and dry formulas. Medina products work by stimulating the soil biology to help all plants. Whether growing landscape plants, herbs, vegetables, grasses, or trees, Medina has the products that help you spend your budget wisely, effectively increase production, and treat the environment right at the same time. They have a brand new prilled organic fertilizer called Growing Green Premium Lawn Food, which is great. The commercial version of Garrett Juice Plus is made by Medina and available in sizes from quarts to large totes. Remember to ask for Medina. The website's medinaag.com, and you'll find the Medina label at all hardware, nursery, and feed stores that sell quality organic products.
Covering the bare soil around plants is crucial, and there are several mulch choices. The best mulch for any site is shredded recycled plant material such as limbs, leaves, twigs, dead plants, bark, spent flowers, and other plant debris that grew on the property. That's the natural way. How it is done in the forest and on the prairie. Second best would be purchased shredded native tree trimmings. Third in line is shredded hardwood bark. Pine bark and cypress are not good choices. Pine bark is just bad in general. It won't stay in place and contains chemicals that hurt plant growth. Cypress doesn't break down well. Mulch should decompose to create the true natural food to feed microbes and plant roots. Pine needles are good, but look out of place if there are no pine trees on the property. Lava gravel makes good mulch and has the extra benefit of keeping squirrels and cats out, but lava gravel has its negative points. It looks harsher than organic mulches, and it doesn't break down into humus. The best commercial mulch is a mixture of compost and shredded tree trimmings. For more information on mulch, go to dirtdoctor.com.
All right, Howard, back with you. We got some open lines all of a sudden here. If you want to jump on board, 866-444-3478. I was talking to Elle off the air a little bit there more, and she's got an interesting tip that I'm going to follow up on. You might want to, too. She mentioned Yates apples, and a lot of you may have raised your eyebrows, and I did. I haven't done that one before. She said it's great. It's an antique, an heirloom type of an apple, very small apple. She said barely bigger than crab apple, but the most delicious apples, sweetest apples she's ever had. So I'm going to try it. How about you guys? If you do, let me know. And if anybody has a real good source of buying them, I just did a real quick internet search there, and I see it mentioned, but I don't see a real impressive place to buy it yet, quite yet. Here's Jim in Orlando, Florida. Hello, Jim.
Hi. I have two fig trees, and unfortunately, I started them myself, and I planted them too deep. Now I have two dominants. And I have an orange tree that I also planted too deep, and now I have two dominants. Where do I cut them, and can I cut them this year?
Okay. You say two dominants. Two dominant trunks is what you're talking about? I would do this, Jim. If you haven't already, I would expose the flare of these trunks. And you can do it by hand. If you do it very, very carefully and slowly with you know, regular tools, heavy, stiff brushes sometimes work well. We have used power washers to do it. Of course, the ideal thing would be to get an arborist to come in with an air spade and do it. But you can do it yourself.
These trees are only 3.5 feet tall.
Oh, they're tiny little trees. Okay. Yeah, just do it yourself. Get down to that flare, and you're going to see that one of them will have a much better and much more correctly formed flare going out into the root structure than the other one, and cut off the one that's the weakest.
Okay.
Cut it all the way off.
Do I put dirt back over it, or leave it exposed?
No. Leave it exposed. Leave that flare exposed.
Okay.
You do it on shrubs, trees, fruit trees like your fig, shade trees, it doesn't matter. Any woody plant wants to have that flare exposed to the air so you can see it. And the reason is it's part of the trunk. It's not part of the roots.
Okay.
And you'll be off and running. Your fig will be fine to cut one of them off. And that's a good thing because if you leave them both on there, they're going to pinch together at some point and, you know, cause a problem, cause some issues.
I got one other question.
Sure.
Yeah, I put up chain link fence. I made about a 2,000 square foot garden. What can I do? What can I put down that's good to put down to spray my fence line so I don't have anything growing there?
Well, did you hear me talking about spraying weeds in the lawn early in the show?
I missed some of it because I was in the car and then I was.
Well, that's fine. You know, the only reason I brought that up is that it's the same kind of thing. Either the vinegar formula, straight 10% vinegar, and put a little orange oil and a little soap in it, like biowash, like we were talking about, if you want to do that. And like I said, I'm kind of at the point now where I'm not sure that a surfactant does that much good. I think this biowash product specifically does several things. Or you can use the commercial product called Avenger, or you can use one of the fatty acid products like Scythe or the Monterey organic herbicide.
Okay, I greatly appreciate any of those information. My orange tree is so old and so short. Thank you very much.
Is it still producing for you?
No, it's not producing.
Well, it may have. It doesn't matter how old a plant is either, Jim, about whether you expose the root flare, the trunk flare, or not. We've exposed an 800-year-old pecan tree, for example, here in North Texas. So even your old tree may really perk up and start producing again if you expose its flare.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
Okay, thank you
very
much.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Open line for you at 866-444-3478. Linda, hang on just one second. I'm going to do this because I'm going to forget it, and if I don't, go ahead and do it. I was asked about palm trees. To comment on palm trees and which ones were my recommendations that were the most cold tolerant. Of course, those of you in the far south don't have to worry about this. You can grow any kind of palm you want to. But those of us in Dallas, Texas, or Oklahoma, or, you know, anywhere along the zone 7 or 8, you know, we have to be careful about this issue. And it's a good question, and it's a pretty easy answer. Some of the best palms are really pretty – palms, too. The one that is probably the most questionable about how hard I ought to recommend it is the one that's the toughest of all, and it's called Japanese fan palm, and you've all seen it. It's the one that has a trunk that has a bunch of fuzzy stuff on it, and if you look at the trunk, you start off at the foliage, dark green fan-like foliage, and you look down to the ground, it'll be smaller. The trunk caliper the diameter will be smaller at the ground than at the top. Japanese fan palm. The other one's Texas sable palm is wonderful, great, huge leaves, real cold tolerant. Needle palm is the probably second cold tolerant, most cold tolerant. It's beautiful. It's a bushy palm. And then Washingtonia palms can be very cold hardy. One is and one isn't. The one called Robusta, which is sold the most, unfortunately, will freeze in a lot of cases in our area, zone 7 and 8. But the one called Washingtonia Filifera is really tough. It's really good. So when you buy one, they look almost identical. Get the one called Filifera. Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor. Number is 866-444-3478. The website is dirtdoctor.com.